WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are we've been talking a lot of baseball around here this week with Camden Yards and them moving the fence back. And I'm doing a little recon here, going back through some of our friends around the country that I didn't necessarily have on the show during football season. Not sure if we're getting to the Super Bowl and getting out to L.A. Greg Bedard, longtime Sports Illustrated guy. I've known him a long time now, doing the Boston Sports Journal thing up in New England. Everybody here in Baltimore wanted me to call and just beat somebody up for New England about the Belichick thing and say, ha ha, they lost. You know, it rarely happens, Greg. Usually I'm on the other side here getting a hard time, but I follow you on Twitter, and I thought the Matt Judon thing warranted a, hey, maybe I should check in with Greg and see how things are going. So how are you? You all right?
Oh yeah, I'm doing fine, Ness. I appreciate it. It's always an interesting season with the Patriots, same as with the Ravens. You know, maybe a bit of an earlier end than we anticipated, especially heading into the bye week when they were 9-4 and the number one seed in the AFC. Since then, it was a swift decline, losing 4 of 5 and getting knocked out by the Bills on Saturday night. So things are good, but you know, full off season mode now and analyzing what just happened with the Patriots.
Well, you know, we could say what happened with the Ravens. They didn't play this weekend, so it was much worse for us, although it looks much worse when you sort of get, you know, a boat race. I mean, literally, I don't know what to make of that. Been a long time since you've seen the Buffalo Bills handle a Bill Belichick team that way. And I guess everybody would ask on the outside, how much longer for Belichick? What's going on? Brady's not coming home. How's Mac and all that? But I'm calling more on the Matt Judon thing because he was the big offseason signing, certainly went well in the early part of the year, but an incredible disappearing. I was looking for 9 there. He's wearing a jacket most of the night, but it was a little chilly, I must say, right?
Yeah, Matthew Judon's disappearance is one of the great mysteries about the 2021 Patriots. There's no question that through about the first 12 or 13 games, he was a legitimate NFL Defensive Player of the Year candidate, to the point, you know, I thought I was going to start asking people about the Ravens, like, why'd you let this guy go? Like, what's the deal? I mean, he's been terrific. He was, as far as we could tell, the way he interacted with teammates on the sideline, it looked like he was fully integrated there. He was great with the media. He won the local PFWA chapter's Media Good Guy of the Year award. I voted for him. He talked good, bad, or ugly. He was always there to answer questions and give you real answers. He was a breath of fresh air. He was a great edge presence for the Patriots, did everything the right way, brought – I mean, I had him in the first 13 games. He averaged almost 3.5 QB pressures a game, which is just, you know, outstanding. And then in the last 5 games, including a Saturday night, I had him for a total of 5.5 QB pressures. He didn't start. That's the only other game outside of Jacksonville when he was coming back from COVID. He barely played in that game. That's the only game he didn't start during the regular season. He did not start in this game. They're paying him $13.5 million, and now you have Patriots fans asking, is this a Dalius Thomas too, where, you know, a former Raven comes in, big free agent signing in the offseason, gets off to a hot start, and then disappears to the point where the Patriots get rid of him? So, no, I'm going to assume that he has some injury issue that affected him down the stretch, and he just toughed it out, because if not, Ness, whew, I don't know what they're going to do because they're paying that guy $13.5 million a year.
Well, I guess in your land, trying to get real answers as to what's going on, especially when there is no locker room access. And I've been talking, and look, we're not a bunch of old sports writers sitting around here talking about we can't get in. They're locking us out around here. They lie to us. They lost 6 games in a row around here, so they're not in a good mood either. And there's a lot more Belichick going on with Harbaugh than maybe anybody would be led to believe. That I think John's enjoying this deliciously that nobody has access to his football team. Yep. And now they're getting used to it 2 years into this. And that's not a good place for the fans. And that's hard to explain that to people. And it's hard to explain what we've done for all of our lives in regard to telling stories. And when a fan wants the truth about Matt Judon or about anything, that at some point the truth will be outed, just, or maybe muted, but at least reported upon. And they've done a pretty good job of locking us out to ask these kinds of questions as to what's mm-hmm. going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I only away game I went was the Buffalo regular season game and that hurricane. I didn't even go to the playoff game because it's like, you know, what's the point? I'm going to schlep all the way there in COVID and, you know, freezing temperatures and who knows if I even get there to what? Ask a bunch of podium questions? I just don't see the point. I mean, us reporters, especially those of us who have been around a while, like I've been doing this for 20 years, the locker room is our playground. That's where we do our best work. We earn the respect of the players, some of the coaches, where, you know, you get the inside scoop of what's going on. I mean, I'm going to dig, you know, through my phone and that way to find out what went on with some of the pieces on this team. But all I can tell you is that the Patriots, you know, to lose 4 of 5 in the fashion that they did, and they fell behind a collective in the 4 games they lost. They fell behind a collective 84-14. You know, what you saw on Saturday night was sort of the rule for the after the bye week. This team, like, they fell behind 20 against the Colts. They fell behind, 20 to the Bills. They fell behind to the Dolphins by double digits. And, you know, then they faced in those conditions and against a team like Buffalo that's that talented, it went to the nth degree. But anybody who is an unbiased observer of these Patriots had an inkling that that was coming. I picked the Bills rather easily in this game, and a lot of people didn't want to hear it, but that was the truth. That's what the Patriots put on film, and they have a lot of answer for this offseason. A lot needs to be looked at.
Greg Bedard is here. He's the Boston Sports Journal, a longtime chronicler, not just of the Patriot dynasty, but also of the National Football League, covered the league at large for a long stretch of time. And, you know, it is unusual, right? Like, the Steelers got their ass kicked, and now the coach is gone, or the quarterback's gone, but the coach has gotten them into the playoffs, 15 winning years. Same thing. New England's got this great winning thing going on here in Baltimore. Same thing. You mentioned 9-4 number one seed. We were 8-3 in a number one seed 2 weeks earlier yep. before that and didn't make the playoffs. And there was a point right around Thanksgiving. And Greg, you know, I'm trying to cover the team like you, and I find very little value in these Zoom things and very little honor in John being mm-hmm. dishonest with us on these Zoom things and very little honor in guys that drop footballs and then don't show up for Zoom after the game when you lose 6 games in a row, everybody's hiding under the locker and like all of that. Lamar ran the ball 21 times after the bye against the Minnesota Vikings in an overtime win. They played 4 days later against Miami. I had the audacity to attend a live press conference with masks on, one of the three times in a year that I was literally in the room with John, physically in a room with John. And I had the audacity to ask, like, 21 times you ran the ball today, Lamar, is that sustainable? Not a dick question, just a say mm-hmm. whatever you want to say. Instead, there was offense taken, and I don't run that much. And John got burred up with me and pointing to me, and the veins are all out on his neck. And I'm like, you play in 4 days. Like, it's a legitimate question to ask. I know you want to control the questions. Then 4 days later, they get their ass kicked in Miami. A week later, Lamar doesn't play, and they win with a backup quarterback. Then Lamar comes back in, throws 4 picks, and is never heard from again, and turns his ankle. And they lose 6 games in a row. This is not normal in Baltimore that this is the way the offseason is going to go. In the same way that Belichick, it's not normal to have the kind of RA they had from the other night that it feels like it's falling apart at the end. You're used to losing a playoff game or whatever, but it's a whole different thing when you're trying, you spend the whole offseason trying to figure out whether, I guess, in New England, if you like this quarterback or not, and whether Belichick's really going to be around for the next 3 to 5 years that it might take for them to win. And here in Baltimore, we have the same situation where the injuries were crazy. And then you start to say, well, Joe Burrow looks good. And you start to see teams like Buffalo get better, get a lot better, I guess, in the case of Buffalo embarrassing New England.
Yeah, you know, no question. I mean, I think, you know, both the Ravens and the Patriots are in strange situations. I haven't, once the Ravens sort of went in the tank and they're dealing with injuries and COVID and, you know, secondary issues and, you know, the running backs were decimated even before they got out of camp. The Ravens weren't really on my radar that much, so I haven't seen them, you know, all that much. I did think that some of Harbaugh's decision-making was curious, just like a couple years ago in the playoffs. Who did they lose to? What was that game 2 years ago?
Well, they've lost several. The first one was the Chargers. The second one was the Titans. And the third one was the Bills.
Oh, the Titans.
So they've lost
the
all
the Titans them. Game. Yeah, the Titans game I thought was a bunch of curious decisions. And I remember, you know, back when I was writing for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, I wrote a column basically like ripping Harbaugh about his decisions to go for fourth downs, you know, early in that game. And, of course, nobody is going to second-guess Harbaugh because going for it and saying, well, I'm always going to back my guys. I'm always going to have confidence in my guys. And, like, that's just a cop-out to not get criticized. Like, in that game, going for it when it clearly looked like this was going to be a low-scoring game where every point counted and, you know, that's the type of game. To not identify what kind of game you were in by Harbaugh, I thought was a dereliction of duty. And I thought some of his decision-making down the stretch going for, you know, 2-point conversions, you know, when it wasn't warranted. I think that he deserves a lot of criticism. And I think that, you know, in the same manner, I think that Bill Belichick has to take a hard look, especially at his defense, his pride and joy is defense, whether it's the coaching with two of his sons on the staff or just the personnel that was completely outclassed by the Bills. I mean, look, Josh Allen has improved a lot. He's not as good as he showed the other night. He's never been that good. He won't play that good in Kansas City. The problem was the Patriots' defense. They don't have enough man cover corner guys. They're way too old and slow in the front seven. They can't compete. They can't rush. They can't cover. A lot needs to be changed, and I don't think Harbaugh and Belichick are used to answering these questions.
Well, I think in the case of Belichick, he's going to be very real when he puts the camera on, right? Like Bill's not emotional. Neither's John, really, about whether it's Calais Campbell or Brandon Williams or Villanueva or the 30 somethings that really that's the page out of the Belichick book. Every time I have Chad Brown on the show, you know, we talk about him coming back. And I remember Anthony Pleasant up there at the end, you know, Bill likes 30 something year old guys, like Lawrence Guy at this point, some of these people, McCourty's and like all that, you know, there comes a point where you turn a page when you're not playing this weekend and you're seeing Cincinnati and Buffalo and to some degree Kansas City wasn't anything special 3-4 years ago before the kid showed up, right? That they're now the winning teams and the Pittsburghs and the Baltimores and the New Englands are home watching football this week.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think that you know, a lot of these teams, and I think, you know, whether it's I think you put the Steelers, Ravens, and Patriots sort of together where their default is to hang on to experienced guys and say, all right, well, they're going to see us through instead of just saying like, all right, I'm going to go with this kid, even though, you know, I give them credit because they went with the young linebackers last year, you know, in Baltimore. And I thought those guys got better as things went along. But, you know, Belichick, his default is, you know, he's got Josh Uche, a second round pick that has ridden the bench. Chase Winovich, a third round pick who was inactive for this game. And instead you have Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy. And, you know, all
I remember
these
when
guys
he got rid of Jamie Collins the first time.
Yeah. The first two times, like, you know, he just keeps, I remember I sent out when he signed this year, I sent out a tweet saying like, oh, yeah, let's just get the boogeymen back together since that worked so well in 2019 when the defense completely disintegrated to the point in the home season finale with the number one buy in the line in the AFC. They couldn't get Ryan Fitzpatrick off the field, and he drove the field to win the game and send them on the, you know, they had to host the Titans. They got run over in that game. I mean, it's basically been 3 or 4 years of them just disintegrating down the stretch in seasons. And I think you can squarely point to the point that Belichick falls in love too much with veteran guys who just, they lose their legs later on in the season.
Yeah, well, you know, Eric Weddle's playing football this week, so what, you know, what do we know? Greg Bedard is here. Tom Brady's slinging it at 45 years of age this weekend as well. Greg's done a lot of covering of number 12 and TB12 and the craft machine up there. What do you make of this Brady thing? I mean, if I'm sitting at the Super Bowl 3 weeks from now in Los Angeles and he's playing again and we're talking about him again, last year I took the Super Bowl off, didn't even go to Tampa, first time in 27 years, and he's still playing. It's the damnedest thing. And I always say to my wife, and I'm not even being half half-assed about this. I say there's some clear thing going on with him, some Balco-y, some weird thing we're going to learn a million years from now, because this is not even like human to some degree. And I don't know what he's doing or what he, how he's cheating Father Time or what he's using some of his side money on. And like, but this is starting to become subhuman. So something that is so far out as an outlier that we have to question it to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no question. I mean, all I know is that when I started covering Tom Brady, it didn't take me very long to never, ever doubt him and his competitiveness and what, you know, he'll do to be on top of his game. And you know, I just, you know, what he's done is incredible. It's improbable. You know, it'll probably never be done before.
As a guy that's been around him, do you stand in admiration of him to some degree? I mean, I've been around Ripken. I've been around Ray Lewis. I've been around great players. You know what I mean? I've been very lucky to be around Ed Reed, be around great players, Sean Ogden, just great players. This is a different level of even that. Like, nobody would even mention Ray Lewis or Cal, you know, any of these other great, great players with him. This is a different level. This isn't even like a LeBron, Michael Jordan argument. This is becoming a different kind of absurd than anything we've ever seen anywhere. I compare it to Gretzky, but most people didn't watch enough hockey to know how great Gretzky was. Yep. He was that much better than everybody by that much, but he didn't play till he was 47. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Tampa's done a really good job. I mean, you know, Brady at his age, he's great, but he, you know, and they've been missing some pieces, certainly AB thing and the Godwin didn't help, but they still have a lot of, they have a deep arsenal, they have a deep bench there, and they protect him. He has a really good offensive line. You need both of those things for Brady to look really good, or else he would look like he did at the end of 2019, where even Tom Brady, a few years younger, couldn't pull that carcass of a Patriots offense across the finish line.
It helps when the Eagles decide not to cover Gronkowski, right? Like, I mean, you want to lose to Tom Brady, don't cover Gronkowski, right? Like, literally, simple as that. And he's also amazing. There's another guy that, like, three different times it feel like they broke him in half and he just would sail on and say, I got my money. They're probably putting me in the Hall of Fame. I don't care. This love affair he has with Brady and with football to some degree, it's re-energized the guy that was probably already going to the Hall of Fame based on what he did in a small sample size, kind of, sort of. But so incredible in that combination.
I mean, but it's also, it's a tough look for the Patriots and Belichick that, you know, Tom Brady and Gronkowski could be going towards winning back-to-back Super Bowls. And, you know, why aren't they doing that here? I mean, you
why
know,
why aren't they? Answer that for my Baltimore crew. I know Seth wrote a book on it, right? I mean,
yeah, like, it's a very complicated answer. I mean, look,
it's
Belichick,
like, why did they get divorced? It could be a million things, literally, right?
It basically boiled down to Brady didn't think he got enough respect or partnership from Belichick, you know, towards the end of his career, and he, you know, said, you know, screw it, you can show that respect in different ways, contract, just words. He got none of it. And Brady said, screw that, I'm going. And Gronk was going to follow Tom, you know, wherever. But, I mean, you have to look at it now. It's definitely viable. You know, look, the Patriots would have been bad last year even without Tom Brady. Maybe they would have made the playoffs. But, you know, would it have been better for the Patriots to have Tom Brady this year with Mac Jones sitting and watching him, sort of like Favre and Rodgers? I don't think anybody can argue with that.
If you have better players around, Greg Bedard is here. We talking football. And what do you make of Lamar at this point? My take on it, and you know, it's not popular around here, is jury's still out. No one's ever won this way. And when he's running into linebackers 21 times in the second week of November and then is made unavailable after that, I felt like that was inevitable, dude. From the beginning, I felt like there's going to come a December when they're 8-3 and he's going to be broken in half and not play for, and it's not even broken in half. It's a foot injury, you know, it could be anything, but when you're taking on that kind of contact and you're built the way he's built, I don't think it's smart football. I don't think it's long-term football. And I certainly think they're in an interesting spot where he's going to be making $20 million this year on that last year of the sort of that window of the deal. And then he's going to become a $40 million guy and a guy they're going to have to give $200 million to. And I am concerned about what they could put around him. I saw that with Flacco here. Once Flacco won, and they were paying him $30 million a year. Everything else sort of fell apart because they needed to draft so well and get everybody to the field because they couldn't sign players and they couldn't go out into the market and sign players. So I'm beginning to think that the Ravens, you mentioned that Titans game 2 years ago, you go 14-2, you get a bye, you got that kind of offense, you got Marshall Yanda on your line. You got to seal the deal. You get that opportunity, that window to win. And I know that that's the thing that probably the Cowboys are concerned about now and other places where you start losing these games in January and you're not playing into February. You know, we're 5 years into this now. This is no longer a one-off experiment. They're going to have to pay Lamar here.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. I mean, I haven't studied the Ravens closely on film, but from afar, there's a few things that they need to answer. I think they'll be fine defensively, especially if Wink doesn't get a head coaching job, and they just need to get healthy in the secondary. I think Eric DaCosta and his crew has done a good job of stocking the secondary. Ever since Yanda stepped away and probably before that, I have not liked their offensive line at all. I don't think they're the right kind of offensive line. You need, with an athletic quarterback, you need an athletic offensive line. And I don't think that group is athletic enough. And then, you know, finally, I don't know if it's the passing scheme that Roman's using, if it's Lamar. They need to figure that out. But their passing game has not been effective enough. You know, the good teams know the way to defend them and, you know, make Lamar beat you from the pocket. Some days he might. Oftentimes he won't, especially if you take the tight ends away. And so I think there are a lot of question marks that they need to get straight on offense, or else, you know, they're not going anywhere.
Hey, man, congrats on losing the weight and on your business and running Boston Sports Journal. Greg Bedard is here. We've known each other for a long, long time covering the league. And you're usually covering games longer into January, as am I. Yep. It is a little weird. You know, the whole COVID thing's been a little weird. I think the offseason is going to be a little disjointed in that way. But you cover all of Boston sports. So it's almost baseball season where you are. We don't have that going for us right now. They're moving fences around here to try to figure out how to get pitching after 30 years. It's bizarre, dude. But I know you got four sports up there. So when the Patriots go down, you move on to the next thing at Boston Sports Journal, right?
Yeah, you know, the Bruins are red hot right now, and you know, the Celtics are trying to make a little bit of a push. They won't do much, but you know, the Bruins, they're trying to hang on to their aging core similar to the Patriots. Hopefully it goes better for them than it did for the Patriots.
One day I'll get back to the North End. I'll be back up there. You know, hopefully I won't be on a bus to Foxborough to get our ass kicked or have Billy Cundiff miss a field goal, because I got some bad memories too. But it's always good to visit with you. Hey, I'm following you, and I saw the Judon thing, and I'm like, you know what? I need a visit with Greg Bedard. So send everybody out to Boston Sports Journal. If you got friends that love, like my wife's whole family loves Boston sports, you guys do as good a job as anybody in covering all those things. Independent, fiercely independent, just the way I like it. Right, Greg?
Yeah, exactly.
Take care of yourself, man. Be well. Enjoy the offseason, all right? Don't work too hard. You know I won't.
Sounds good. Thanks.
There he goes. Greg Bedard. You can follow him out on Twitter and on social media, certainly at Boston Sports Journal, BSJ, the way to do that. Maryland Crab Cake Tour is going to get back out on the road. We're going to get at Nacho Mama's. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Facebook. We got to stay safe right now. So masking up, staying at home here, shoveling when we need to, moving out, moving on like the Jeffersons, and moving on up to Towson. So we're going to be around all winter into the spring. We're going to be doing some Maryland Crab Cake Tours presented by the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play, giving away some scratch-offs, and more than that, having great conversations, which we're still having around here, including with my partner in crime, Don Mohler. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.